a word print. With word print analysis, it's possible to tell who did not write a particular letter or book or article, whatever it might be. Who did not write it? And it's based on a discovery that every author who has been studied so far uses one of 65 identifiable patterns. And these patterns involve the use of simple filler words like and, of, the, and that. I'm going to show you an example from my own writing. This is what I wrote in the thing I was writing one time. There's no inequality in the land, and all enjoy the blessings of God. I took that thought that I pulled out of something I'd written, and I rewrote it the way a better writer might have written it. There was no inequality in the land, and all enjoyed God's blessings. Just one of those filler words in this last one, but in the first sentence there were four of them, you know. These four key words are found, well, they're found four times when I wrote the first one and just once in the second one. That in the first one up there, the blessings of God. That plural form in the Bible so much, I have a tendency to use that Hebraic way of writing there because I'm so used to it. And another thing I do is I use too many that's. Isn't that right, Gail? I use too many that's. If I wrote a one-page thing, and then when I go to proofreading it and everything, I can pick 15 that's out of that I ought to get rid of or change to some other word. And other people that write better, they don't do that. But see, somebody could quickly take a page that I've read, compare it to something else, and find out, hey, that guy didn't write that. There aren't 180 that's on that page, you know. And so that's what a word print is. Well, 36 tests were run on the Book of Mormon. And the writings of Joseph Smith, of Oliver Cowdery, of Solomon Spaulding, and others who took part in that early point in our history, and they were compared with the writings of Nephi and the writings of Alma. The group which developed these tests came from varied religious and philosophic backgrounds. One of them was a Mormon, one a Protestant, and one an atheist. The bottom line of the whole thing was, they said the writers of the Book of Mormon were not Joseph Smith, were not Oliver Cowdery, were not Solomon Spaulding. Furthermore, the study showed that the books within the Book of Mormon were written by a number of original authors and then condensed or translated by a single person. Now, isn't that interesting? But we have known that for a long time, haven't we? As understanding of this new technique increases and a reliance upon its accuracy grows, I think this old argument about where it came from, you know, it's going to be silenced. But you think that'll be the end of criticism? I don't. I think it'll spring up somewhere else. There'll always be that criticism. So never fear, you'll always have criticism to face. But don't forget the promise of God to His people. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. And every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord. I'm going to conclude. Wow. Really, at last? Yeah, you know, men and women, we're used to judging everything by watches and calendars. Some of you have been thinking about your calendar instead of your watch. An hour ago you were looking at your watches. I saw Dick pulling his calendar out of his pocket. But God doesn't do that, you know. God doesn't judge everything by hours and days and weeks and years. But don't ever forget, God has a grand design. A grand design. And there are moments in history when His prophesied events are concluded, when they take place. I could give you any number of examples, but I don't think I have to. I'm not going to take time to do it. I want to read one more time an objective of the Book of Mormon. One of the purposes of the Book of Mormon It's going to be out of the second book of Nephi in chapter 12. I'm going to read a few verses. "For after the book of which I have spoken shall come forth and be written unto the Gentiles and sealed up again unto the Lord, there shall be many which shall believe the words which are written, and they shall carry them forth unto the remnant of our seed. And then shall the remnant of our seed know concerning us how that we came out from Jerusalem, and that they are descendants of the Jews. And the gospel of Jesus Christ shall be declared among them." A purpose of the Book of Mormon. My belief, my personal belief, is when the work of the Church of Christ began among the Maya people in Mexico is a direct fulfillment of this prophecy. The interesting question is, well, couldn't it have taken place at any moment in time? Couldn't we have just exercised ourselves and done that thing at any moment in time? I think not. I believe it's prophecy. I believe it was tied to other prophecies. When Clarence and Angela went down to Mexico in 1951, they made their first trip into Mexico. They had their own personal agenda. They were going there for their own personal reasons, and they were interesting reasons. But they had in their hand an introduction to the last king of the Mayan people, a little man in the center there named Nemencio Xu, the last living king of a people who have a history of more than 2,600 years. And they had in their hand an introduction to this man. And they went to his home, and unknown to them, there were two men who were there who had years before received a prophecy from a prophet, a man they know only as the prophet, who told them one day, the gospel of Jesus Christ will come to the home of Nemencio Xu. Could we just say it could have happened any time? Absolutely not. The Lord had a timetable. They didn't realize, I don't believe, no, they didn't realize, we didn't realize that this dramatic prophecy in the Book of Mormon related to their ministry among the ancient people of Mesoamerica was tied to another prophecy, even more interesting. When Jesus talked to the descendants to the ancestors of those people, when he stood in their midst, and the ancestors of those people, he told them that one day you will see the city of Jerusalem established and inhabited by the Jewish people once again. All right? That doesn't sound so bad to us. We've seen it happen, you know. But Clarence hadn't seen it happen. That was still in the future. But that's what the Lord told his people, and he gave them a sign of when it would happen. And he said, this is a sign, when these things shall be made known unto the Gentiles of the Father, and shall come forth from the Father, from them unto your descendants. That's the sign for the liberation of the city of Jerusalem. In 1951, the gospel arrived. In 1953, the ministry were called and the church was established. And just 14 years later, we saw something happen that the world couldn't even have imagined a decade before. The city of Jerusalem, inhabited by the people of Israel once again. A few years ago, our brother and evangelist, Placido Coyote Yam, Sr., was given a remarkable revelation through a spiritual dream. In that dream, he saw a young man dressed in white. And the young man dressed in white approached him, and in his hand he had a book. And he recognized that it was the Book of Mormon. I'm sure it was a Spanish one, but it was the Book of Mormon. The book was opened to the second book of Nephi, chapter 9. On the page there, he saw the outline of an airplane. I'm not going to go into all the ramifications of his dream. I don't really understand them all. And he saw a map. I know how I'd love to see that map. But he saw that outline of an airplane and he saw a map. And then the man began to read from this prophecy. And you can also read it in Isaiah, but it's found here in the Book of Mormon. And in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people. To it shall a Gentile seek, and his rest shall be glorious. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people. And then he said, this day, this prophecy is being fulfilled among your people. God is at work fulfilling prophecy that is contained in this book that relate to this nation and to this people and to the ancient inhabitants of this land. Brothers and sisters, this is Israel's day. This is the day of Israel of which Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, of which the Book of Mormon is filled with prophecy, and the work of Jesus Christ among Israel is going to begin among the remnant of Jacob upon this land. When Clarence went to Yucatan, there were hearts and minds prepared by the Spirit of God to receive his message. He asked those two simple men, would you like to have a Sunday school so you can learn about the gospel? Oh yes, that's what we desire. Their minds were ready. I believe the same thing is true today in other lands, perhaps Guatemala and Belize, I know, and Honduras, I know it is true. There are minds of people that are being made ready today to receive the good news of the gospel. In Honduras, a doorway's been opened. Doorway's been opened by the humanitarian work of these two brother, this brother and sister and others right there. They've reached out in love and compassion to a poor and an underprivileged people, a humble people. And God is going to open it and make it a doorway of opportunity to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. In this latter day, the Lord has spoken to this people and said, this gospel will be preached in every nation and kindred and tongue. But it's the poor and the humble who will hear and believe. Brothers and sisters, we need to be preparing ourselves for the doorways that the Lord is going to open. I believe the Lord has moved upon this people in the last few days and caused that work can go forth in greater power. The doorway is open, the opportunity is presented. And what we need to do is prepare ourselves mentally for the great work that lies ahead of us. Out at the East Local, I mentioned, you know that peculiar expression in Peter, gird up the loins of your mind. Get yourselves mentally prepared for sacrifice, for effort, for direction, for privation perhaps. Get yourself mentally prepared. That's the first thing. Mentally, spiritually prepared for what lies ahead of us. There may be great sacrifices asked of us all. Some may be asked to leave their homes and their families. Others may be asked to serve in distant places. Others close to home. Others in their neighborhood. Others reaching out at every opportunity that God may present. There may come a day when tithing won't begin to cover the necessity of the work. Get yourselves mentally prepared to double your tithing, whatever that might be called. That's the first thing. We live, I'm convinced, in a fleeting moment of history. special. God has called you. He's touched your heart that you be here in that special fleeting moment of history. And if we take advantage of it, we can ride on eagle's wings to the fulfillment of His will. And if we do not, we'll be left behind. Individually, collectively, may God strengthen His people. May He bless us. May He strengthen us. May He make us mentally prepared. And I'm really sorry to have kept you for so long. I didn't really mean to, but I didn't want to quit. And I don't ever want to quit, really, you know. And I don't want you to either. I want us to go from this place, and I want us to be inspired about the fact that we have been privileged to know the Lord Jesus Christ, a living Jesus Christ, who has called us in a special moment of history. Be ready to answer the call. Thank you. God bless.